Saturday with Cullum O'Mungon on RTÉ Radio 1.
Hello again. Now, on Wednesday afternoon, the Oireachtas Committee on Assisted Dying delivered its report, which recommends the introduction of assisted dying through legislation and without a constitutional referendum. Across 38 recommendations, the report lays out the conditions under which people could choose to end their lives, including assessments carried out by psychiatrists to determine a person's competency and capacity in making that decision. Well, earlier I spoke to Professor Siobhan McHale, consultant liaison psychiatrist and member of the Human Rights and Ethics Committee of the College of Psychiatrists of Ireland. The College warned against introducing assisted dying. So I started the interview with her by asking her if her concerns had been reflected in the committee's recommendations.
There are a number of recommendations in the report that we're very pleased to see. Recommendations 12 and 14 that relate to improving palliative care. Recommendation 20 that relates to the lacking robust support at the moment for informal carers, the need for increased mental health supports, and the need for research in this area. But a core principle of introducing assisted dying in the forms of assisted suicide or euthanasia in Ireland legislation, we are not in agreement with.
Okay, so the issue of addressing the difficult cases we've seen heretofore, people who are terminally ill, who are looking ahead to a very short prospect of living and saying that the quality of life they are looking forward to is not something they want to live through. That's not a choice you feel should be facilitated.
I believe that as an Irish society, we should not be placed in a position where we're having to face these challenges at the end of life. I have heard a number of stories, and I work with patients in general hospitals with end-of-life care, either cancer or neurodegenerative conditions, who are facing these very challenges. The shock, the grief that's associated with hearing that what you fear most is ahead of you can hugely result in very challenging decisions and very complex adjustments for people and their families to make. And in that great shock and grief can often come the feeling that I need to end my life as the only way of dealing with this. What we do know is that, in fact, if we improve our palliative care, there was a TILDA study carried out. The TILDA cohort is a really strongly respected group of looking at older age citizens in Ireland. And in 2020, they published their finding on end-of-life care for older end-of-life patients in Ireland. And what they found is at least 50% had either depression or falls or fear of being a burden in terms of remediable factors that could and should be addressed. And I have worked with patients who have had such great fears in terms of being unable to see any alternative to ending their life other than by suicide in the context of a neurodegenerative condition. And when they were provided with the appropriate hospice care and support and encouragement that they would be cared for appropriately, including not prolonging their life, not adding in things that make a person can decline in all situations, if they have capacity, can decline any life prolonging care at the end of their life in terms of supportive palliative care. This person in the hospice care died a death that they were very, very happy, surrounded by their family, to be able to have achieved when they never thought that that would be possible.
And have you ever treated someone who didn't change their mind, who persisted to the very end that the right course for them would have been to end their life earlier?
That hasn't been my experience, nor is that the experience that I hear of people talking about their loved ones perhaps having to come into emergency departments, lying on beds in their last days of life, people being left in intractable pain. These are the scenarios where people don't have the advocacy and support, and which inevitably leads to a call for something to change. And we do believe that something needs to change, but not that the change needs to be ending our patients' lives because we can't provide them with good enough care. So there are calls for palliative improvements in palliative care, bringing in the palliative care strategy that needs to be published and updated, needing to bring in the mental health care supports for people at end of life, but also for their carers. There's a huge dearth and a huge level of distress for carers in trying to care for their end of life family members in the absence of appropriate supports.
And do you worry that if assisted dying is legislated for, that the assessment of a person's facility to make that decision, their capacity to end their life, would fall to your colleagues, psychiatrists?
I think in the recommendations, that is one of the things that's called for. Any doctor has the skills to assess a patient's capacity. For more complex capacity assessments, where it is more complicated, for example, I've worked with people who have had brain injuries on ventilators, who have been requesting end-of-life decisions and that. And in those situations, this particular person, for example, had capacity and in terms of saying, I do not want my active treatment to continue. So they weren't asking for assisted dying. They were asking for what they're completely entitled to in the current legislation, which is to say, I want my current treatment to stop and to be given support to relieve my symptoms. The heart of our training as psychiatrists and the heart of what we're working with in Ireland is a strong focus on suicide prevention. This very much undermines that strong focus. Assisted dying is a term, is a blanket term that covers two terms: assisted suicide and euthanasia. The ending of a person's life, a person choosing to end their life because they cannot see any other solution, goes against the very heart of what we're trained to do as psychiatrists, which is to work alongside people and to support them in finding other solutions.
Do you think doctors have the capacity to detect if coercion is present in somebody's decision making?
I think that's a real, real challenge. In many cases, we do. But in many cases, we don't. We know that coercion and abuse is a very hidden area. While we are good and can be good at detecting a certain amount of coercion, undoubtedly, we do not have the tools to be able to investigate to the level that we do know that coercion and abuse does occur.
And that was Professor Siobhan McHale, Consultant Liaison Psychiatrist and Member of the Human Rights and Ethics Committee of the College of Psychiatrists. Richard Boyd-Barrett, your colleague Jean O'Kenny introduced an assisted dying bill that was deliberated on before, but I suppose was one of the things that influenced the formation of this committee and its deliberations. He sat on it as well. Both the for and the against side when it comes to assisted dying agree on the issue that certain care needs to be in place if this was ever to be legislated for, although obviously those against don't want it legislated for. But would you go along the road with them to say that palliative care, suicide prevention, all of those things would need to be addressed before assisted dying was legislated for?
Well, first of all, let me just commend Jean O'Kenny for bringing this issue into the Dáil. Quite frankly, I don't think it would have happened, and I don't think the committee would have taken place without Gino bringing it in, and the people who he's working with, who were keen to get this debate going, and to bring in the right of people to die with dignity through assisted dying. And I mean, look, you see, all of the issues that
Professor Siobhan McHale
brought up are pertinent issues. But I think what we're talking about here is people with incurable diseases, often very, very cruel in how they impact on the end of people's lives. And against that background, it seems to me that, first of all, I think the use of the words like suicide are not helpful, because I think that's really a different phenomena. What we're talking about is people whose lives are going to end, and the question is, will they end with dignity, and will they end in according to the wishes of the person whose life is about to end? And I think in that context, we need to make all the choices available, whether that is improvements in palliative care or the decision somebody might make to say they can't go through that hardship, sure, that pain, and to make the decision that they would rather end their life on their own terms. And I think that is an absolutely legitimate thing. Of course we need safeguards. And that's what the legislative process is about. And there are, even in what the recommendations of the committee, doctors are involved. There will be oversight bodies. Of course, there are concerns about coercive control. All these things have to be addressed.
I'll come back to you. Neil Richmond, there are other jurisdictions in which assisted dying has been introduced. Canada, the Netherlands, Belgium, Oregon in the United States. And where it has been introduced, the safeguards, the restrictions have been loosened over time. Even Oregon, where it's quite restricted, something like waiting times have been looked at. And it's happened to the point where the Danish submission to that committee have said that they drew the conclusion, if we offer assisted dying, this is a quote from their submission, it says directly or indirectly that some lives are not worth living. That was a real concern in Denmark. Why are they wrong?
Well, it's not about for me to say why they're right or wrong. I think this is a really, really serious issue that has taken this committee in particular over 9 months, 25 hours of public meeting, many more hours of private meeting, very, very difficult testimony. There is very few jurisdictions in the world. You've listed all of them, bar more or less Switzerland, where this has been introduced. So there isn't a huge widespread. There isn't some template to pick up. And this is something that...
Well, in the case of Switzerland, just to make the clarification, it's not through their health system. They allow non-governmental organisations like Dignitas to do it. Yeah, sorry, go on.
But the process allowed for it. And I would actually like to pay credit to Gino, like Richard. I don't necessarily agree with Gino on a lot of things, but I think this is something that he has a personal passion for, and I recognise it. And when this came before the Dáil the first time, I would have voted for it to go initially to a citizens' assembly, and I didn't actually vote for it to go to second stage. This is literally death we're talking about. It is the biggest issue that any of us face, never mind politics, that faces in as humans, and it requires very serious consideration. We have now a good report from the committee with 38 recommendations that requires very detailed reflection. I haven't actually fully read the report yet. It's only come out on Wednesday.
Too detailed for the lifetime of this government, would you imagine?
That's not for me to decide. It'll be for the next or the current Minister for Justice who this will go to decide. But certainly if we were to have a general election in the next couple of weeks, like Richard and Jennifer will, it wouldn't be dealt with. But it is an issue that has to be reflected on. And I think we have to be fair. This wasn't a major issue in the last general election. The public didn't necessarily make this an election issue. It certainly wasn't in the manifesto of my party. I don't know if it was in yours, Jennifer. I know it's been an issue associated with Gino for a long time, and I paid credit from that. So it is a lot of reflection. It's not something that you can rush in any which way.
Okay. Jennifer Whitmore, we've seen decongregation of disability settings happen in the absence of the adequate supports that people said should be in place, the move out of institutionalised mental health without fully staffed multidisciplinary teams, the reconfiguration of hospitals without necessarily the adequate resources being provided to primary care infrastructure. Is there not a real danger that the easy bit of this is to legislate for assisted dying? The hard bit is to have all of the supports and safeguards in place that would make people actually have a real informed choice if they were to ultimately go down that road?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'd think is I don't think this will be an easy thing to legislate for. It is a really complex, really emotive, very, very difficult issue. And I think the report is probably, you know, a very good starting point. But I think there will still be a lot of things to be teased out and a lot of discussions to be had. But what I found interesting from listening to Professor McHale was everything she was saying, I agreed with. You know, we do need better palliative care. We do need supports for disability. We need all those issues and all those supports to be put in place. But personally, I think that there is a level of autonomy, personal autonomy and a personal choice that need to be afforded to someone who is and finds themselves in that situation. And, you know, there are very... you know, sort of strict guidelines that were specified in the recommendations about timeframes and everything. And I think that's important. But I do think it is really important because we have failed on so many different levels. We have failed people. who need palliative care. We have failed people who don't get all those supports for caring for people for disabilities and everything else.
So going really back to the dissenting voices, would you prefer to see those things in place first before the final step of legislation was done?
I think we would need to, I mean, ultimately we need to see those things put in place now. I do think that there will be time before the legislation through. Right. I think it needs to be, you know, discussed further, and there will be a considerable process, I think. But we need all those other things in now as well, and there hasn't been the correct focus on them.
Richard Boyd-Barrett, there's an article today by Mary Carlin in the Irish Times. It's looking at the increased prevalence of people getting barring orders against adult children, elderly parents getting barring orders against adult children. And we know in situations of domestic abuse, it can often be the case where it might be years before somebody even admits to themselves they're in a coercive control or abusive situation. Would you be concerned that decisions could be influenced by adult children and effectively coercing older people into making end-of-life decisions without that being fully and properly interrogated?
Well, I absolutely think we need safeguards on that. There's no question about that. But I also note that after the 9 months of deliberation by the committee, we have 11 out of the 14 members of that committee endorsing this report and saying that with all the safeguards, with all the things that Siobhan McHale talked about, we should legislate and allow people to have that choice available to them to end their life with dignity. So, yes, of course, there's no doubt. And with anything as sensitive as this, you need the safeguards. But I also think ultimately people do have the right to make that choice. And, you know, because the other side of the coin is people living a very cruel and undignified ending to their life. And that is something that has to be addressed.
Okay, before we go to our next break, I just want to go to some of the people who've been in touch with us. Bree DeGann says she's nursed people with end-of-life cancer care in St. Anne's and St. James's hospitals, all treated with dignity, without pain, with their relatives close by. She agrees with Professor Siobhan McHale. Somebody else saying, hi, Colm, having watched two parents die in hospital after long illnesses, I can only contrast their experience with the planned and regretfully agreed euthanasia of my dog. The dog died peacefully in no pain in a calm room surrounded by family. The dog had a much nicer passing. Personally, I'd sign up for that, says Claire in Ballantyre. And another listener, Anne, says, assisted dying. Let's call a spade a spade. It means too easily assisted killing. No way should we descend to that. We'll be back after this break.